Previously on Compassion Radio.
And at the bottom of this lake was a huge cloud of CO2 gas and hydrogen sulfide and things that boiled out and spread across the landscape like a fog. Twice has this lake boiled over, and twice have thousands and thousands of people been suffocated in the wake of this thing. And the people that were suffocated were those who were refugees fleeing terrorist attacks.
Intrepid.
When God tells you to go, then everything works out. He provides.
Involved.
It is so exciting to see what God can do. And this is why there is so much hope.
International.
Compassion Radio allows the listener to get involved in projects that are going to change history.
This is Compassion Radio. Tracking the triumph of God in every nation on earth. Welcome on in to a Friday edition of Compassion Radio. Hope your day is going well thus far. Well, the last couple of days, Bram has been giving Cher and I an update, up close and personal, on his recent travels to the African nation of Uganda with the ministry Conscience International. As we continue with our third day of discussion, we pick it up with Bram sharing about his experience in a refugee camp in northern Uganda.
All through the camp, as we traveled, we would walk from one little village to the next. And by village, again, we mean like a little cul-de-sac of huts, that may be five or six. And that would be about the size of a clan, or we would call a large family. And they did that because in most of the cultures in South Sudan, polygamy is pretty much the standard. Now, it's done differently with different religions. For example, all the Muslims that live in that part of Africa are, by their interpretation of Sharia law, entitled to four wives. So if you have any clout whatsoever in the Muslim society, you have four wives. They may not be people you actually live with. They may not be people that travel with you. You may not even support them directly, but you have four to show that you are somebody. In all the other Christian-influenced tribes, they would have settled on the number three because as missionaries looked at the culture, they said, you don't need four wives. But we said, we have to have more because we have nothing if we don't have big families. So they literally, I think, compromised a few hundred years ago and said, well, three is the number of the Trinity. Therefore, Christians should never have more than three wives. And that's pretty much been the standard across all of Central Eastern Africa since maybe the 1700s.
Well, and Bram, it is cultural coming down from the Bible, too.
That's true.
In the Old Testament, they had many wives, and part of the reason was when they had a war, they were responsible for the widows and the children of the conquered people. And so in order to not have them be homeless and starving, the men took more than one wife in order to provide for them.
Yeah.
Now, some of this is true in Africa, too. There would be such a bigger problem if they did not have multiple wives that they were looking after, although it provides a whole another set of problems.
Yes, it does.
There is some logic within it.
There is, and we're not passing any judgment whatsoever on a culture that has had thousands of years of history, that it even modified a bit and responded to a gospel input to say that within the Christian community, within this worldview, within the world that this God wants us to live in, you don't need to show your wives to be profitable. You are rich in the kingdom and rich in the spirit. Therefore, that was kind of the message that was coming from the Christian families that were there. So pretty much what you're looking at is a family compound everywhere you cross over to a new circle of huts and a new circle of cropland around there was one extended family. And so you have this functional widow community, but they are still an intact family. And they had what they call the stool wife, which was the young one, which would probably never consummate a marriage, but would be that keeper, that older sister of the other children. And so that would be a normal family unit for South Sudan, at least toward the Nuba Mountains. Now, I met other families that were families completely by God's sovereignty, in that they literally were individual widows that had no connection, no help, no hope of ever seeing their husbands again. They would get to the camp, and because they were literally widowed orphans, or orphaned widows, you might call it, they were assigned to each other. And I sat down with one group of ladies, one elderly lady named Cecilia and a Mary, and I forget the name of the third girl was in the group, but they were from different tribes. They were from different parts of the country. They spoke different languages. And the government had assigned them together to this one little village. So I asked them what it's like to be a family now. And they said, we are family. We have no one else to turn to. We are one.
Mm.
And it was so interesting to see that they had actually worked out their own pidgin, be able to talk between their own languages. And they knew enough French and enough English between them all to translate for each other. And we sat together and had a long visit about what it's like to be a family in the context of all this loss and not having any other identity. It was just fascinating because these women of multi-generations were forming that bond that you would think would be a family.
Mm-hmm. And to cross tribes like that is a very spectacular thing.
Yep. I asked them what part of Sudan they were from, and the older lady, Cecilia, looked around and said, all of it. She just swept her hands across the women in her group. So this is South Sudan.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you're also the future of South Sudan. And she said, God willing.
Amazing. One thing that strikes me looking at these pictures, and our listening friends will see them soon, it reminds me in many ways of the Karen camps in Cambodia and Thailand, where they've been displaced. They were offered UN housing, which they took in the tents and in the camps, but immediately started to forage in the forest to find things that they could build their own huts again and created their own little villages again. It's very much like that. It's not like the Middle East camps where it's just miles and miles and miles of UNHCR tents, very little that looks like home. They've built their traditional huts, obviously very rudimentary, cement blocks, thatched roofs, dirt ground, but it looks like home. It's not as depressing as living in the tents where there's nothing familiar.
It was a practical decision on their part, too. They realized that the clay that they were living on was sufficient enough to create the kind of clay bricks that are necessary to build a real wall. And the grass that was available to be harvested was enough to thatch the roof so that they could get the heat off their heads. Because even though they're up at like 7,000 feet in altitude, and it doesn't get much hotter than maybe 85 or 90 at most, it still bakes inside those little tents. So when they thatch them, they can keep the heat off the roof, and the bricks give a little more weather protection. And they don't tend to get huge storms like we do in the latitudes that we live in, but they do get plenty of heavy rains in the rainy season. So
just
got
the entrepreneurial spirit of it, to not just be depressed and live in the tents, but then in the Middle East, there's no place to forage for anything.
That's true. So when all you have is sand, you can't really build much.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, the soil was fertile enough to grow things. I saw gardens that I would
fabulous.
Grow.
Fabulous.
You know, big patches of squash and zucchini and things and okra and stuff like that we would grow here in the South. Very common there. And actually, some of the tribes weren't even familiar with some of these vegetables, but they learned how to grow them quickly because they realized they had some nutritional value and they were easy to take care of. So they literally would carve the earth into bricks and let it bake in the sun. Think about the children of Israel and Egypt, for example. And they would eventually build these huts and surround the original tent and make the tent kind of like the inside wall. But they had kind of a uniformity to them because there was a structure laid out by the UN for the size of the huts that would fit in these small cul-de-sacs. So everywhere you look in the camp, pretty much all the huts look very similar, as if they were all part of one tribe. And that's what was interesting to me. I asked them, what tribe are you from? What tribe are you from? They would all say, well, we came from. And they would say, but here, we are one tribe. And I said, what is your tribe now? And I heard five times that day, our tribe is refugee.
Wow.
Hey, Bram, I want to ask you a question. Here you had the opportunity to visit this particular refugee camp there in Uganda, and I'm looking through some of the photos, and I can see that you're praying with some of the people there. Did you have the opportunity to share with them that you are a broadcaster and that you would be able to perhaps share some of their stories to American audiences on the radio? And if so, did they have a message that they wanted to share with us?
The answer is absolutely yes, and you couldn't mistake the fact that I had a microphone clipped to my shirt.
Right.
And that I had the recorder clipped to my hip, and it had microphones and a fuzzy top to it, so people would wonder what that thing was, and we talked about it a few times. And I said, yes, that the people in America who don't know you yet want to know you. And if you're willing to tell some of your story, I promise you that I'll get that story to people who care. And I'm not sure what they can do, but I guarantee you that they will pray for you. And so they opened up. And with the expectation that people across the ocean, and we talked about how far away it was. We even looked at a globe once, or a globe, a ball. I said, you're right here, and we're over here. That's how far on the planet we are from each other. They were amazed that someone across an ocean and across another continent would be interested in hearing their stories.
Thank you, friend, for listening to today's Compassion Radio. We'll get right back to this discussion in just a moment. Please stick with us for a timely announcement towards the end of our broadcast time today. We'll share about our ongoing project for the month of August called Christ in the Conflict, and also about our special premium we're offering for your support of this boots-on-the-ground daily radio ministry. Our phone number is 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. And online, we can be found at CompassionRadio.com. Let's get back now to our program.
They all asked us to pray for peace. Every single one of them. And they had peace in the camp. And they're working very hard at it. And when there are people that are in the refugee camp, that are part of the tribes that are committing most of the violence against their countrymen back in Sudan, who speaks as an elder for all of them, and they speak in agreement that we are one people, we will go home together when God wills it we should go, we will build South Sudan, we will make it our home, but for now, this is our tribe, and we are one. So they asked us to pray for peace again and again and again.
I found it interesting, too, that you also got the comments of, we've told this story before. Why should we tell them to you again? Other people have been there to assess things, and they've seen nothing happen. How did you handle that?
Well, the ones saying that were the young men. Mm-hmm. And again, we have like a couple dozen, maybe at most, that I met. Probably, I saw maybe 10. And I talked with a few of them and spent time with a number of them personally, one-on-one. The young men that were up there were the educated ones that had been commissioned by their families to protect and save their village or tribe. And so they were stuck with the unenviable task of not being able to fight the enemy. So part of them felt like they were lesser men because they weren't able to stay and fight for what was theirs. And they felt like they were being given the last place on the totem pole.
Mm-hmm.
But when you think about what they accomplished, and we reiterated that to them, how many of your village could lead a group this large, that far, and survive? And I would ask, how many did you lose along the way? And each of the men would say, probably not one. We're all together. We're safe. And I said, what a great accomplishment.
Oh, my goodness.
You know, you've done what people in most nations could never do. So you are heroes. But they were frustrated that they didn't have anything to do now.
Mm-hmm.
And we talk about over the years that many young men start by going to the front of the line and taking care of all the details and finding out how the camp works, mm-hmm. where food will be distributed and what to do. And then after a couple of weeks of doing the same thing over and over again and not getting anywhere further, they kind of fall away. And the children start doing the chores.
Right, and that's when the frustration sets in with the young men.
And these young men that I met were educated. They're engineers, or some were welders and shopkeepers and tradesmen of different sorts. Some were teachers. But to a man, they were saying, we've told the story a number of times, but of course, with always different agencies or different government people. We had a girl along with us from the agency in Kampala that we worked with. The agency is called Refuge and Hope, and we'll tell some more of their stories soon.
Mm-hmm.
They sent a couple people with us that were there to assess the psychological condition of the camp because they were mostly social workers and trained counselors. And so Harriet was the lead person there, and it was awkward because she's a woman, and the men don't want to tell their stories to women. They want to convince men to do something. And she deftly handled their inquiries and their frustration by reminding them that I may not be able to do anything for you, but I care what you have to say, and I do work with your countrymen that are living in my city. And maybe something you have to say today can help them.
That's excellent, but I do feel for the people. We've been in that same situation where they've told their story over and over and over to people that come through the camp, take pictures, say that they care about them, but nothing ever changes because they don't understand that we don't have the power to go home and say, this needs to be changed, and it changes. They think people from America particularly have a power that we simply don't have.
Yeah.
But what we do have is a voice that we can use to continue to talk to those in power who do have the ability to do something. But we have to keep speaking up.
And we're going to have to speak in as well. And I know that some of the divine appointments we had while we were in Kampala are going to be part of that solution. So I was praying along through B2B to Camp, how do we make a difference here, or how do we help those who can? Because my mind was running through all the possibilities. And that's what we do at Compassion Radio. We think about possibilities.
Absolutely.
And how God's going to raise people up to do extraordinary things. It's not about being stuck. It's about getting unstuck.
Norm's question was always, why not?
Yeah, exactly. And I looked around the camp and I asked some of the ladies, what do you do to worship? You talk about being a Christian family. Where do you go to worship? And they said, well, there's a church up the road there. And it was a building that it was maybe three times the size of a hut. So maybe you could fit 30 people in there standing if you wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Still had no roof on it. And I said, what do you do with that church? And the older lady that I was asking that question to said, we don't know what to do. There are no men. And I thought, wow, that is a linchpin right there. You have a culture that depends upon mm-hmm. male leadership, and of course, a Christian history that is usually dependent upon male leadership. So I had that conversation at length with some other folks over the time afterwards, saying this is our crisis.
Mm-hmm.
We know we're called to a kingdom kind of ethic here, that we're going to teach people how to be all that needs to happen within the kingdom. But without the men, we're going to have to enable the women to step forward and take some of that responsibility and that authority they've never, ever had.
Mm-hmm.
And I asked about worship. Do you sing songs, whatever? I saw one musical instrument in the entire camp, and it was a little drum kind of thing that some kid had stretched over a piece of log that had a hole in it. And one guy told me that he saw a stringed instrument of some kind with like a stretch thing, like a lyre.
Mm-hmm.
But no music culture. There wasn't songs being sung because they didn't have anything to sing with.
That's a crisis for Africans.
Yeah. So I looked around thinking, what would happen if one couple or a family moved into a set of huts or made their own huts and lived with them for a year and taught them how to praise and to worship again, taught the kids how to enjoy sports and activities together, and led them in worship and taught the women mm-hmm. how to actually lead Bible studies in their own. I mean, to think what could happen.
Wow.
You know, and nobody's doing it yet. And it seems like the government's wide open to it, but nobody stepped in or stepped up to say we could do those kind of things and build the kingdom of God from within the camp.
Now, the listeners, begin to pray about that, that God would raise up that person. Maybe it's you.
Hmm.
Maybe it's somebody you know. Maybe you have no clue, but you'll pray about the situation. Yeah. What an opportunity.
So that was the kind of things we saw along the way. And as we drove back towards Kampala, I sat down with Harriet and Gilbert, her assistant, who was with us taking pictures and also assessing the psychology of the place. I said, let's talk about what we saw for a while. And we had that conversation. And then we talked about what we did not see. And most of it came down to was the sense of identity being more than just I survived.
Mm-hmm.
And being part of something larger than themselves, they understood they were all in the same straits, but there wasn't yet a sense of being part of something bigger than themselves they were proud of yet. So building the new South Sudan, building a new culture that's international or intertribal, is something they're going to have to grow into. We did not see music. We did not see songs. We heard no radios. We heard nothing like that that would say people are here assembled doing stuff. So it was very quiet throughout the camp, and they were busy tending their gardens, but they're all like right around them. I mean, they don't have to walk very far,
mm-hmm.
and they're trying to crank out an awful lot of produce in a very small area. And they would go down to the streams when they actually got a little bit of rainfall. They would get a little water going through there. They could use that for washing, but the only places they had fresh water they could use was dropped in by gravity feed from the tanks at the top of the hill, and they were sent down through little PVC pipes that were buried a few inches in the ground. But there was no wells being dug there because, again, it wasn't supposed to be permanent. But the water was only for cooking and only for drinking.
Mm-hmm.
So if they wanted to bathe, it happened every few days down the creek when the water flows. And that was also where they would take their wash. So there was a lot that we were not seeing. And for me, there was a lack of vision for what the kingdom can do within the camp, but all the potential in the world. No one's holding back people from doing the work of the kingdom there. The government's happy to see churches pop up because that's part of their culture anyway. Many identify as Christians, if not all. But there wasn't a sense of what's next. There was simply a sense of how do we make it to the next food distribution so we can get the sorghum we need for the staple calories, and how can we make sure that we don't lose our gardens, that we tend it correctly. It's all literally hand to mouth right now.
Yep, our daily bread.
So I didn't even know how to start praying for these ladies, but a couple of times we had that opportunity to sit down and pray at length. But you just kind of pour out of your heart what God leads you to pour out at that point and not make promises you can't keep.
That's the thing. Always important to remember when we're there.
Well, Bram, once again, looks like the clock is kind of our enemy. We're going to have to kind of wrap things
up. It's not an enemy. It's an invitation to come back tomorrow.
This is true. This is true. We have our allotted time.
Yes, we do. But
we will indeed pick it up very soon, once again, here on Compassion Radio. Thanks so much for giving us all this information, Bram, your word's eye view.
Thank you, Jimmy. And what an honor it is to be able to be the eyes and ears for Compassion Radio, which means all of these people that are listening right now. I mean, we have great friends around this country, around the world, that support the work we do each month. We can't tackle every project we see, but we are always out there assessing and hopefully convincing people that the kingdom is booming in places where you least expect it. And the BDBD camps of northern Uganda and the other refugee camps across that part of Africa are exactly the place where God is, I think, ready to bust loose with some real revival. And people are going to come back to faith and come into faith that they've never had before. I want to be part of that somehow. We'll talk more about the partners we met along the way that are beginning to ramp up ideas and plans for how to reach these people. But I want our people to know how important it is that as we go, you're praying for us and supporting the work. And Jim's got some details now about how we're making a difference in another war zone, one that continues to drag on and on, that would seem like a real stalemate, but it's not a stalemate for the gospel. The project that we have this month continuing through August is one that's truly transforming Eastern Europe. I want to make sure that our listening partners get to be a part of that before it's over.
Well, thank you, Cher, and thank you, Bram, for sharing in this dynamic discussion today. And thank you, listening friend, for all your heartfelt prayers and ongoing support of Compassion Radio, now in our 74th year of ministry on radio. Okay, Bram's back in studio with us here. Tell our friends why we're keeping on with the project that we started in July.
And I'm glad that we are. I mean, there's a reason why we decided to carry this one over, and it's two parts. One is, we managed to fund the first year of pastor work there in Ukraine because of the generous giving of our partners. So we're thrilled about that. But here's the thing. The conflict's not going anywhere, and it is exactly the kind of project that we keep stumbling into this month. I mean, All About Uganda was all about conflicts. There are probably going to be some projects we do in the future with people that are actively doing things on the ground there, but they're not ready yet. But Ukraine is going to continue to be a sore spot in Europe. It's going to continue to be an opportunity that's ripe for action and for results. It's still a dangerous hotspot. And I can't think of anybody who deserves to get a little more support than Oleg and the folks at New Life Community there in Kyiv. The whole Hope community there in the war zone of eastern Ukraine is essential. And we could send more pastors there if we were able to fund them. Maybe building a new orphanage, because they've got two or three buildings they actually use as orphanages there now. I don't want people to think we're not doing something this month. We're doing more this month. I want to see Oleg and his team succeed like they've never succeeded before. And so I want to focus again on what's happening in eastern Ukraine, kind of like we've done other parts of the year with our Bibles for China campaign or other things where we've seen a real response that's been very positive and there are more opportunities to get more Bibles in places. Of course, we'll keep doing that. Ukraine is like that right now. There are so many opportunities to really reach new people, Russian people, Ukrainian people for Jesus, and start new churches throughout that region of the world that is one of the most secularized places on the planet. Does that make sense, Jimmy?
It does. It does. And Bram, I understand that we're going to continue with our very special premium offer DVD for this month, a film that's just wildly popular. It's amazing. And I know there's a really good reason why you chose it, too.
War Room is a great film. It goes right to the core of what it means to be a powerful and effective Christian. And it's a great tale, but it's also a very true story. Whenever God's people discover the power of prayer, things start happening. Why? Because God starts laying on the hearts of the people who are willing to pray the things that He wants prayed. And think about this. If God wants something done, he tends to inspire his people to pray for those things so that they can work in tandem together, in cooperation. And this story, War Room, is all about what it means to go to spiritual warfare and suit up for battle.
For your special gift of $50 or more, we'd be delighted to send you, on DVD or Blu-ray, the powerful and highly successful theatrical release of War Room. Order yours today, and thank you so much for standing with us. You can reach us in one of three ways, by phone at 1-800-868-2478. That's 1-800-868-2478. By mail, reach us at Post Office Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. That's Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Or online at CompassionRadio.com. On behalf of Bram Floria, Cher Nelson, and the entire Compassion Radio team, I'm Jim Governale. Have a wonderful day in the Lord, and we'll see you again next time with more Compassion Radio.